If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Amy Bazzari. Amy Bazzari is a Chicago-based travel writer. If Amy isn't home baking, you'll find her wandering the world, checking out her next new adventure. Amy has come face-to-face with gorillas. Amy has also drove the complete length of Route 66 in a minivan with both her kids in the back seat. And she was also a mermaid. We are going to discuss her paranormal adventures on Route 66 and so much more. I'll be back with my conversation with Amy Bazzari right after these brief messages.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experience them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
Amy Bazzari, an author, a journalist, a mother, a cook, a teacher, an expert in wine, Italian language, and Italian living. We have a lot to talk about. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Yes, I have a lot of interest in life. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, I came across your book, The Best Hits on Route 66.
Okay.
And I read a little bit about it and I said, man, I got to have you on the show.
Oh, wonderful.
Let's start with that. Let's start with that book. What led you to go to Route 66?
So as I just said, I am a woman with so many varied interests and passions, and I've long been interested in Route 66. It starts in my hometown city, Chicago, and every once in a while when I'm downtown, I'll pass by that starting point on Adams Street. There's a little sign marking it just off Michigan Avenue downtown, and I always thought one day I am going to drive from Chicago all the way down Route 66. I did. I decided I think I'll go for this. I had a summer free. I had a great time planning my trip, researching all the places I'd like to stop at. And I packed my two kids into a minivan, and we hit the road from Chicago to Los Angeles. We took about 3.5 weeks, and it was an unforgettable trip.
So 3.5 weeks, I take it you stopped at a lot of places.
We did. We took our time. It was nice to have time to, you know, really explore some of the places. I really am still recovering from driving just outside Oatman, Oklahoma, where all the donkeys roam free. It's a really difficult pass up in the mountains, and I was clinging to the steering wheel of the minivan. And my daughter was about 5-6 years old at the time, and she looked down in the valley and said, "Mom, there's a car down there and it's upside down." And I just, oh, that was a tough a tough little trek there, but the rest of the trip was just absolutely wonderful. And I was really happy to, especially with my kids, expose them to this little bit of American history, this long road of American history that's on Route 66.
Yeah. I mean, my sister and her husband and my wife and I, we were going to do it last summer. Mm-hmm. And then my dad took a turn for the worse because he's dementia. And so we have to stay around the house for a while.
Yeah. But,
that's on my bucket list to hit Route 66. And I said, I have to get this book because, you know, so many sites to, you know, to look at, you know, since this podcast is on the paranormal, I read that about the orbs, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And did you come across that and what did you see or anything?
So we did try to catch the orb. Unfortunately, we did not see it in action, but yes, there is a mysterious orb. It's about basketball size. It's glows. Many people have spotted it, and it's named for the former town of Hornet. It's in the northeast corner of Oklahoma, just off Route 66. And it's a really creepy name for a road. The road is called Devil's Promenade. We did pull up. I turned off my headlights and we waited. My children were a little bit scared. Oh, yeah. As I tried to explain, well, people say it is a friendly light. And we waited, but we did not catch it. So unfortunately, we didn't see it. But I have talked to a couple of people who have seen it, and they told me their story. And I believe there's a little bit of the paranormal connected to the Hornet spook light.
Yeah, you know, I had a friend of mine that did travel that route, and he said when he seen it down, like it was like sitting in the middle of the road.
Uh-huh.
So he thought it was the moon, you know, like coming up or something like that.
Yeah.
Until he started getting closer and closer, and then the moon was getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. Until it was like maybe grapefruit size, he said.
Yeah,
that just moved. It just took off, you know.
Mm-hmm. That sounds similar to the accounts I heard from the two people that I personally interviewed. One person was Grace Goodeagle, and I just love talking to Grace Goodeagle. She's an elder member of the Quapaw Nation, which is based nearby there in Quapaw, Michigan. And she said, I can quote from, you know, what she told me during our interview. She said, "One night when I was about 10 years old, my uncle drove my siblings and me to the Devil's Promenade. Moments later, a glowing light appeared in the distance deep in the woods. We weren't afraid of it, though." So she did share that she felt that it was not a scary light, more of an aura of energy, and not negative energy, not happy energy, but just an aura of incredible energy. It didn't have any negative vibe at all. She did say that many people in the area believe that this may be the ghost of a murdered Osage Indian chief. So Vance Rudolph was a local who was also a writer and historian, and he wrote a book in 1947 called Ozark Magic and Folklore. And he mentioned that he had seen the orb. He also shared the legend that many locals believe is tied to the orb, and that is that a Quapaw Nation maiden was... She tried to drown herself in the river. Her warrior lover was killed in a battle. She drowned herself in that river there. And ever since, her spirit sort of floats around the area. She's never let go of her despair that she experienced in this corner here of Oklahoma. But Goodeagle disputed those tales, and she reminded us that the Quapaw peoples were not actually native to that area. They were forcibly removed from their home in their ancestral home in the Mississippi Valley beginning in 1830 as part of the Indian Removal Act. So the legends pointing towards Indian spirits haunting the area are just that, they're legends. Of course, it could still be a paranormal entity. Mm-hmm. Quapaw did not believe that it was related to a legend. She said, our nation believes in spirits, good and bad. Mm-hmm. But our family felt that the lights were simply due to nature and not good or bad spirits playing around with us. So that was her take on the origin of the mysterious orbs.
It just took me back to my friend who was telling me about his experience with the orb. So, well, it's kind of similar, you know, and the more I looked into it, like there's a lot of stories like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot coming from the Native American Indian, you know, mm-hmm. even as being maybe a curse put on a certain
ooh.
Section. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know about, you know, all of that. and I will put the links to that book and all your other books at the bottom of this episode. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to another article I read that you've written, Touring the Rusty and Decaying Cells of Joliet Prison.
Yes. Let me pull up that article here. So I have my notes handy. I had the chance to tour the old Joliet prison just after it was recently given the okay that people could come back in and take a look. And it has a long, dark history. This was a prison built in 1858. It's mm-hmm. neo-Gothic. It looks like a castle, a Frankenstein could live here. It's a huge.
Right, I've seen the pictures online. It looks wicked. Yeah.
So it looks like a castle, but as soon as you go in there, yikes, you can feel the heavy air of the suffering that took place in here and of the inmates who once lived here, were executed here by hanging or electrocution. Wow, this is a historic site that has a very complicated history and a very heavy presence. You walk in there and it's so dilapidated still, but you can still envision what it was like when this was packed with prisoners back in the day. It was built in 1858 and only 33 convicts were brought there at first. And when it opened, the Chicago Tribune noted that this will be for many years to come the pride of our citizens. But by 1878, it was bursting at the seams from 33 convicts. They housed 2,000 inmates in 1878. Horrible conditions, mm-hmm. overcrowded, violence everywhere, disease ridden. And very creepy was seeing the motto carved on the stone floor of the first cell block. It said, it's never too late to mend. I just felt, oh gosh.
Yeah, I guess it goes right through you, right?
Yeah, you just feel a heavy, heavy presence here. And also it was abandoned for so long. So a steady stream of vandals came in, accelerating the natural damage that the building underwent from our cold winter snow, all that. Yeah. But you really feel like you're stepping onto a horror movie set, especially when I passed into a former medical room. It was still filled with decrepit equipment, paint mm-hmm. curling off the ceiling. The chapel, its windows are totally shattered and the floor was just covered in debris and the cell blocks are painted with satanic symbols. I can't even tell you how heavy my visit was. As fascinating as it was, I really did feel a heavy presence.
And I see that the Blues Brothers movie was a part of what was filmed there.
That's right. Yeah. So it does have that funny connotation of related to the Blues Brothers, yeah. You know, John Belushi's character, Joliet, Jake mm-hmm. Blues.
Right.
He, busted out of there in the 1980 film, The Blues Brothers. But in addition to Joliet, Jake Blues, this prison has seen thousands and thousands of men come through its walls. And many of them were very violent criminals. Mm-hmm. Others were executed. Others died of disease. Yes, I suggest pay a visit around Halloween when it opens for tours. And you won't need to go to a pretend haunted house. This right. is the real haunted house.
The real
house.
Deal, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I see another article you've written was Cook County Hospital, once known as Chicago's Ellis Island, mm-hmm. came back to life as a hotel.
Yes. So this is in Chicago, our Cook County Hospital. It was, as you said, once known as Ellis Island. And mm-hmm. it, at one time, half a century ago, it was treating more than 100,000 patients, low-income patients per year. Its emergency room was one of the busiest in the world. It was known as Chicago's Ellis Island because it welcomed many of our early immigrants. And my own family, our family were immigrants, one half from Italy, one half from England and Ireland. And my family probably went to that hospital for treatment back in the day. This was where all of the immigrants were able to go seek treatment. No one was refused treatment at any time. It is, again, a place with a very heavy presence, even though now it's very luxurious because it's been transformed into a beautiful hotel. But as you walk through the halls, which still are the wide hospital halls, they're wide enough to accommodate a stretcher. You can just, you know, still feel that pain, suffering, all of that drama that took, medical drama that took place here over its 150 years of service. Now it's a hotel, but for 150 years, this hospital treated patients with diseases that we don't really hear much about anymore, but right. deadly diseases like smallpox, scarlet fever, tuberculosis. So it was a place of pain, despair, and death, but also hope. Definitely a lot of good things came out of this hospital as well. Medical knowledge and healthy patients who were cured of their illness through the efforts of the doctors and nurses who worked here.
It kind of blew my mind that, you know, the hospital was built in 1832 mm-hmm. and with that many patients, over 100,000, you said, each year, then make it into a hotel. Mm-hmm. My thinking is, you know, if people are hung or electrocuted, mm-hmm. that's not good, you know, to me, make it into a hotel because there has to be some lingering spirits hanging around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mother was a nurse at a hospital, and it was a modern hospital, and she worked on the cardiac floor and had her and her nurse colleagues had several eerie paranormal experiences at a modern hospital. Can you imagine how many, I have to believe, I believe in ghosts and spirits, mm-hmm. and I believe that with so much drama happening in this one site here, it just, you feel that heavy presence. It doesn't leave, that pain lingers, I believe, especially the terrible pain that must have been felt during the deadly cholera outbreaks mm-hmm. of 1849 and 1854. These were disease outbreaks that just decimated families. It makes COVID look like, you know, no biggie. These were horrific mm-hmm. outbreaks, incredibly scary. Many children were lost. And I just have to believe that, I do believe that some of those spirits lingered here a little bit longer, hoping to come back to life. Especially children, and so many children dying during those years. Very, very heavy presence here at Cook County Hospital.
Right. I'm just thinking because, you know, I play in a band, and few years ago, we used to rehearse at our local hospital. That's just been abandoned for I don't know how many years. But, you know, we're up in a third floor right up by the psych ward and the old psych ward. And I'll tell you what, there was times during our rehearsal, there's little children that's running down the hallway screaming and playing. And you open the door, there's nobody there.
Ooh.
With that many deaths at that hospital, you know, and then to make it to a hotel, I mean.
Well, it was also an army hospital during the Civil War. So add on all of those soldiers that came back here. Actually, now that I think of it, my great, 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 great grandfather served in the Civil War in the Union Army, and he was in the Battle of Mission Ridge. He was shipped off from Chicago, young single man, and he had a wound to the hip, a gunshot wound to the hip. So we do have documents that he had been discharged due to a gunshot wound to the hip. And I wonder if he came back to Chicago and was treated here.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I'd have to, I doubt those records are still around, but who knows? Now I'm intrigued now that I think about that.
Well, I see that you love your Italian connection. So you lived in Rome for 5 years. You worked as an editor, proofreader for the Italian Ministry of Health, and you're a fluent Italian speaker and an expert on Italian travel, food, and wine.
Yes.
My father-in-law taught me how to make wine years ago, many years ago. Oh,
wonderful.
And my way was a whole lot different than his. Talk to me a little bit about your Italy connection. I mean, even staying there for 5 years, where did you stay?
Yes. So I finished my last year of college overseas in Italy at the American University of Rome. And then I stayed on. I couldn't leave. I fell so in love with Rome. Rome is my city. And I am fascinated with ancient Roman history. I'm so fascinated. I end up living in Rome all of those years, making the most of my time there and visiting so many incredible places. Rome is, if you want to talk about paranormal presences and activity, I think Rome is the perhaps the king hub of mystery and intrigue and ancient history. That there are so many hidden places there where, you know, the early Christians worshiped, where there were the Colosseum, mass killings at the Colosseum on a mass scale for entertainment.
Right.
Rome is just has an incredible history and an incredible dark history as well.
Yeah. You know, you think of even the Vatican, you know, all the stories I hear from inside the Vatican.
Oh yeah.
Itself, you know, because it's its own little city, you know.
Oh, absolutely. The Vatican has its own share of paranormal stories. I mean, endless paranormal stories in Rome. It's just so many generations upon generations upon generations have lived in Rome. I believe I know it's one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities in the world. Okay, Jericho is the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world, but Rome is right after that. Yeah, I mean, it was a settlement from the Bronze Age. So wherever you go in Rome, you are walking on history. You are walking on human remains. You are walking on incredible events that happen in history on a mass scale. And I think that's why Rome is such a special place. It's just all of those, the past lingers in Rome.
Being a food and say a wine connoisseur, what is your favorite wine and your favorite Italian dish?
Oh gosh. Well, I would say I will take a nice Barolo wine. Barolo is the royal wine of Piedmont. It's made with Nebbiola grapes. It has that rich flavor and aroma, but I also love that high acidity. I like those high tannins. I will take I will take a well-aged Barolo. And gosh, I have to say, I've taught my children to cook and I love a delicious homemade pizza. My son actually cooked dinner for our family tonight. He's 20 years old and he made a delicious homemade calzone, which is a pizza folded over, stuffed with fennel sausage. And he made a delicious homemade red sauce and cheese, fresh mozzarella cheese. Oh, delicious.
And my wife's Italian. And when she was in Italy a couple of times, it was, you know, she was telling me that a lot of those places that she went to, including her relatives there, they don't use sauce like we do here in the States. You know, it's everything was like oil, garlic based or.
Yeah, we do. Red sauce isn't an everyday thing, but Italians always do make a good red sauce.
Right, and if they do make a good red sauce, they don't use very much of it.
Yeah, no. In fact, spaghetti and meatballs, if you ask for that in Italy, people will know immediately that you're American, because while meatballs are a thing in Italy and spaghetti, of course, is a thing, they aren't served together with a ton of loaded with red sauce and Parmesan cheese as we we have here in America. But of course, that's always delicious, spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah, my grandfather, he is from Naples. He's since passed, but he never learned to speak proper Italian. And then he came to Chicago and he didn't have any, never even had the opportunity to listen to proper Italian. So when he came to visit me in Rome, I have to admit, I was a little embarrassed because my grandpa was speaking, old fashioned dialect. Not only was he speaking dialect, but he was speaking a very old fashioned dialect. Mm-hmm, and everybody just thought, you know, taxi drivers and waiters all thought, where is this man from? Is he from the past? Because he just had a very interesting language and a very funny and colorful dialect. Neapolitan is a very funny and colorful dialect. So everybody got a kick out of that.
I watch that show on TV. I think it's Santucci, Tour of Italy.
Yes, I have not watched it yet.
I love that show, man. It's like,
yeah, I do. You know, I do not like watching shows about Italy because I want to go back to Italy. I miss my Italy a lot. I have not been to the Apulia region in southern Italy, but it's, I've seen pictures of it and everybody tells me it's absolutely beautiful. It's one of those, it's undiscovered Italy. You know, everybody goes to Rome, right, Florence, Venice, but truly these off the beaten path coastal towns are stunning.
But you know, there's so many regions and different types of, and you know this from your making food and knowing the different recipes from different regions. You know, how the grapes grow in different, the different regions, or every region's different.
I want to pack up my bags and move there is what the problem is. So, but I do visit Italy every year. And actually this past year, I did something very interesting and I wrote an article about it for Smithsonian Magazine. So if you look up my name, Amy Bizzari, Smithsonian Magazine, you'll see my article. It's titled, When I Celebrated the Summer Solstice with Ancient Roman Gods and Goddesses. Mm. And I actually, before I went to Italy this summer, I thought for a minute, I was wondering, are there any people who still worship the pagan gods? Apollo, Minerva, all of those ancient gods. And yes, there are. So I found a group of people that is trying to revive the pagan traditions, and they invited me to celebrate the summer solstice at the temple that they built.
Awesome.
Just outside of Rome, a temple dedicated to Apollo. And they were a group of modern day Romans, all walks of life. There were, you know, there was a carpenter, there was a woman who was half Polish, and worked as a translator. There was a writer, there a housewife, all sorts of people. And it was one of the most wonderful days I've ever experienced in my life, celebrating the ancient ceremony as the ancient Romans would have done for Apollo. It was absolutely incredible. So check that article out. It was really an incredible experience, and I was delighted to write about it for Smithsonian.
Well, I have a few more questions I want to get to you, but can you come back after a short break?
Okay.
Hey everyone, Eric here. I am the host of the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. Join me for a new episode every Wednesday as I delve into the unseen world with historians, authors, researchers, and investigators as we try to understand and make sense of the paranormal. You can listen to past and future episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or at unseenparanormalpodcast.com. Please like the show on Facebook and share with your friends. And remember, some of the scariest things are unseen.
I'm just so intrigued by everything you've been involved with. I mean, you're a busy, busy lady.
Yes.
And to be a mother of two. And I noticed that, you know, I had said before that, you know, I'm a sucker for old romance. And mm-hmm. I came across your story about your great, great grandfather who was a firefighter.
And that's, yes.
And that's how he met your grandmother.
That is true. Our family, I come from a long line of Chicago firefighters. And there was Walter Dacre Jr. and Walter Dacre Sr. The legend is that he met my grandma the night of the Great Chicago Fire. He was on duty as a volunteer firefighter. And apparently he saw my beautiful great, great, great grandma and her red hair flowing in the wind, the fire reflecting off it. Well, he thought it was on fire, but really it was just her fiery red hair.
Oh, yeah.
And he swooped her up and carried her off, and gosh, the rest is history.
That's something like you see like in the movies, you know?
I know. I think, oh my gosh, if there anybody in Hollywood is out there, make a movie about the Great Chicago Fire.
You know, that is a really interesting story in itself.
Oh my God, it would be such a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving a Hollywood producer the idea for free. Just give me a little credit in the screen credits. But yeah,
the next time I talk to Marcus Clark, I'm going to throw that at him.
Yeah.
You know, he was a producer of director of a few of the Unsolved Mysteries. I did an episode a while back.
Ooh. And, okay.
He was a really, really, really cool guy.
The Great Chicago Fire. Can you imagine? You know, it left 100,000 people homeless.
Oh, my God.
Think about that. Uh-huh. You know, one night, small fire, it just blew up the whole city. And I think about it sometimes. It just pops up into my daily life in some way or another every once in a while. That Great Chicago Fire. And I'm proud to say that I'm the descendant of some great Chicago firefighters. My Walter Dacre Jr., you can see him online. There are pictures of him and his engine company. And he worked on one of those old engines, you know, horse drawn. Imagine that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
yeah. So we actually have a Chicago Firefighters Museum here in Chicago. It's a very small museum on the south side. It's only open, I think, one Saturday a month, but it's an incredible little museum if you're interested in fire history or mm-hmm. firefighters.
Yeah, I've been to Chicago, I mean, probably 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I went to I have an old jukebox. It's like 1955. Uh-huh. So I went to, it was a jukebox show in Chicago. And I heard about, you know, Chicago being the windy city. But when I got there, it was really a windy city. It was, I think the 2 days I was there, it was really windy.
Oh, yeah. Chicago's a great city. My hometown, my sweet home, Chicago, for sure. Mm-hmm.
I see you produce several walking tours with a voice map. What is that?
So a voice map is a very cool app. Check it out, download it, and you can find audio tours in over 300 destinations around the world, and they're voice activated. So you would download one of my tours. Mm-hmm. And I have one on the Gold Coast and one that covers downtown. As you walk to each site, so you follow a map, it brings a map up on your home screen of your phone. And as you reach each point, my voice automatically comes on the phone and gives you a little audio tour.
Oh, cool.
It's really incredible. Yes. Really incredible technology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Linked to satellite or whatever. I'm not the most techie person, but as soon as you reach the coordinates of the featured site, my voice pops up and it's an audio walking tour.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it is an app. Yeah. Check it out. There are so many cool tours on there. And these are tours for people who have really, they're really niche interests. I have a tour on VoiceMap on the hidden history of Chicago's Gold Coast, which is very cool. That does have a little bit of Chicago fire history in it. I take you to one of the last alleyways in Chicago that is paved with wood block stones, not stones, wood block pavement.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing until, can you guess why all of the cities dropped wood block pavement?
All because of the Chicago fire?
Not because of the fire, but because it smelled so bad because the horses would peep and poop on it. And pee on wood is not easy to get out.
I wouldn't think so.
I have pets. So yeah, pee on wood, not good.
No, I wasn't thinking. I was thinking about the fire, Chicago fire, maybe because of the wood streets,
Yeah, I know you would think, but the main reason was that it stunk. It smelled right. So bad, intolerable. Wow,
I wasn't thinking that, yeah.
I think fire was the secondary reason, but people really couldn't take the smell.
But if you had a horse-drawn, fire engines,
Yes, yeah,
that probably wouldn't be good. I see that also you have a love for Walt Disney.
I do.
Which brings us to your, I don't know if it's your new book, but 111 places in Walt Disney World that you must not miss.
Yes, that has not been published yet. That is a while off. I believe it is set to publish later this year, but I do have a book that I actually just shared on my social media that it's available for pre-order today. And that is my upcoming Civilian Conservation Corps cookbook.
Oh, okay.
So once again, I have another very niche interest here. As I said, I said it right off the bat. I have a lot of interests, but yes, I have compiled a culinary history of the Civilian Conservation Corps. I was hiking in Tennessee during COVID with a park ranger at a state park. So I was hiking with a national park ranger at Pickett Civilian Conservation Corps Memorial State Park in Tennessee mm-hmm. in the summer of 2020. And the park ranger said, "Well, I really wish I had a recipe book so I could recreate some of the meals that the CCC enjoyed, because the CCC was known for preparing delicious meals. Those young men who volunteered were just coming out of the Great Depression. Men were skinny, unhealthy, and the CCC beefed them up with delicious food. And I have compiled all of the delicious recipes that they served in their mess halls."
Awesome. So it's like your own cookbook then of the...
Yeah, it's a cookbook of dishes that were popular in the mess halls at the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I researched archives to find original recipes. And I remade them to fit the modern kitchen. But you could also, I did also include a few large scale recipes if you'd like to serve an army, literal army, I have included.
You said that your son was 20 years old and he made that pizza?
He did, yes.
Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe does he like to cook also?
He does. I know. I'm excited for I haven't received my actual physical book yet, but it is available for pre-order. I should receive my physical copy any day now. And yeah, I'm going to hand it over and tell them to get cooking. The recipes are actually very easy. very delicious. And perhaps best of all is they are absolutely very cheap because, you know, this was just after the Great Depression. And it was important to, you know, families learned how to make wonderful meals with limited ingredients and avoiding costly ingredients.
I see you had one book. It's American Palate Series.
Yes, I've written two books for the American Palate Series on food history. One on dishes, drinks, and desserts invented in Chicago, and another one on dishes, drinks, and desserts invented in Los Angeles. I do have a detailed history of each recipe and then the actual recipe. And I adapted, again, all of the historic recipes are adapted for the modern day kitchen.
Yeah, and I see that you had two books, 111 Places in Chicago, 111 Places Chicago for Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a theme here with this 111?
Yes. The 111 Places is a series. There is a book for most major cities around the world. It is a German publisher I worked with for a year to bring that book to light. And that publisher is called Emmons. The 101 series is designed to be a guidebook for locals. So the places that I featured in 101 Places in Chicago that you must not miss is a list of off the beaten track places in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I challenge any Chicagoan, no matter how long they've lived here, to check it out, because I know I will surprise you with some of the places that I feature in my book.
You can live in a city and not know a place, like even like I'm in paranormal. I had a past guest on just recently telling me about a place near me within 20 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of before.
Yeah.
So it's funny how there's places in your own state, in your own area that you should check out. I mean, it's America is such a beautiful country and there's so many, everybody wants to go to the same spot. Like you were saying, some of the best places out there are your hidden places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely. In fact, I'll share one little place, not little place, but one very paranormal place that I featured in 101 Places in Chicago that you must not miss. And that is Confederate Mound. Ask anyone, where is the largest mass grave in the Western Hemisphere? Do you know where it is?
No, I do not.
It is Confederate Mound, and that is located at Oakwood Cemetery here in Chicago. It is the final resting place of 6,000 plus Confederate soldiers. Again, the largest mass grave in the Western Hemisphere. And how did this come to be? The Confederate soldiers that were buried here came from Camp Douglas.
Uh-huh.
Camp Douglas was a training ground turned prison camp. And the Civil War, when the Civil War began, after the Union won a victory at Fort Donelson in December 1862, the camp became a detention facility for Confederate POWs. The camp, Camp Douglas, was, again, like the old Joliet prison. It was a terrible situation for the young men that were held here, the enemy soldiers, but they were dealing with severe cold. It's not far from Lake Michigan. And the cold and wind just, you know, tore through the buildings. The guards were very cruel. Most of the prisoners here died from disease, mm-hmm. scurvy, dysentery, smallpox. Right. Mm-hmm. And its nickname was 80 Acres of Hell.
Wow.
So yeah, that is a place in Chicago that so few people know about. It's a very remarkable memorial when you think what went on here. And 42,000 soldiers are allegedly buried in the grave site.
A Confederate?
Confederate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I did an episode a while back on the Ouija board and how that came about, you know, and it was basically because of the Civil War, you know, because these so many soldiers that didn't get to say their last goodbye or died on that battlefield, you know, hundreds of miles away from home. and they weren't given that proper burial. You know, the Union soldiers, they gathered up off the field. A lot of the Confederates, they weren't given that proper burial, you know, mm-hmm. and left there. Then the story was told about, you know, how they were moved to different spots. Mm-hmm. And the families never got that closure.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So I got to thinking that many soldiers, you know, in Chicago.
Again, you know, a lot of people look back and think, oh, yeah, the good old days. Well, oh, it would have been terrible to mm-hmm. be living during these times. Chicago in the 19th century was difficult for anyone, but especially difficult for anyone who was imprisoned, either in Camp Douglas or Old Joliet Prison.
I see you have another book too called Discovering Vintage Chicago. What's that one about?
Again, that's another tour of Chicago. I profiled places that have been in the city and are still in operation for 100+ years. And these are all the, you know, timeless classic Chicago history focused places that you can still buy a hat, where you can still see Marilyn Monroe's name carved into a bar top. That is the Drake at the Drake Hotel. You can see learn more about the cocktail lounge where Al Capone used to hold his informal meetings, the Green Mill. A lot of history is still alive in Chicago through these wonderful classic places. Drugstores, bowling alleys, every place featured is a place that had once witnessed a historic event.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned that at the beginning, you know, that you're an author and a journalist and a mother and a cook, mm-hmm. Expert in wine and cooking. And, you know, I did mention one thing when I'm going to ask you about this. You know, you were a teacher for 20 years.
I still am a teacher.
Oh, you're still a teacher? Okay. Wow. Okay.
I know. I am an extremely busy woman.
Oh, my God.
I know. But all of my books I write during the summer. So every summer I love writing. Writing is not a chore for me. It doesn't feel like a job. I find great joy in writing. And I only write about things I'm interested in.
Yes, let's hear. You had a master's of art in education, and you focus on bilingual language.
Mm-hmm. I am an Italian teacher for Chicago Public Schools. Yes, that is correct. And actually, the school where I teach at is we have had confirmed paranormal sightings. So I'm glad you asked about my teaching career, because I have been teaching for almost 20 years at Schurz High School, northwest side of the city. Our school was founded in 1910. It's an old building, and we have had several reports of paranormal activity at our school. If you look on YouTube, you can find a lot of paranormal investigators have come to our school to figure out what's going on. In my own classroom, our classrooms are very old. We have wood floors. We have inlaid wood cabinetry. These are things you don't find in public schools today. Mm-hmm. And I do have a cabinet where every once in a while, it just slowly opens and slowly closes. And wow. Every time that happens, I tell my students the stories of the paranormal stories and the history of our school. And as you mentioned with the Civil War, our school has had World War I vets. You know, our school has had students who went on to serve in World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War. And I always like to share that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I always tell my students, I think that these are spirits that are coming back because they never had the chance to enjoy high school, find their way in life, receive their education, and they're lingering, and we need to respect them by studying, enjoying life, making the most of our lives. That is how we can make peace with these paranormal spirits, and they will help us. Mm-hmm. So we do have a ghost living in my classroom, I say. It is very creepy, okay? I truly believe that.
What grade do you teach?
High school. It's a high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these kids they pretty much know about paranormal activity and.
Yeah. I mean, they're creeped out whenever this thing happens with the cabinet. Now that they know the story, because usually it happens the first couple weeks of school, and a student will be like, "Wait a minute, why is that? What happened?" And I'm like, "Okay, everybody, settle in for a very long story here." So now they are all familiar with the ghost, and every time it happens, they are still very creeped out. They are surprised. These are tough city kids, but. Mm-hmm. Oh, that cabinet opening makes them pause for a moment, open their eyes wide, and sort of.
Have they named the ghost yet?
We have not named the ghost. Uh-huh. No. But yeah, there have been several ghost sightings at Schurz High School.
Well, Amy, it's been my pleasure, man, having you on the show. And thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. That I have so many passions in life, and I just feel lucky that I'm a writer. I have an excuse to explore all of them deep in depth.
Oh yeah, we could probably talk for another 2 hours.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So wonderful. And thank you so much for having me. Again, I'm Amy Bizzari, and you can find me on social media, Instagram. I just started a TikTok account. You can find me on TikTok even. Doing some Chicago history videos. And yeah, if anybody has any questions about my books or articles, feel free to reach out. I love talking to readers.
And I will put all of Amy's links at the bottom of this episode.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Amy Bizzari, all the way from Chicago. And I will have all of Amy's links at the bottom of this episode. I will see you all in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.